Humans can't hear very well underwater, but the marine environment is rich with sound. Marine mammals have evolved to use sound to communicate, navigate, find food, and to avoid predators. Today, a cacophony of man-made sound is making these basic activities more and more difficult. Researchers studying the endangered North Atlantic right whales at the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary estimate the whales have lost an average of 63% to 67% of their communication space due to an increase in commercial shipping traffic in their habitat. Joining us to talk about research into the impacts of ocean noise on marine mammals and some ways we can mitigate those impacts is Denise Risch. She studies acoustics at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Northeast Fisheries Science Center here in Woods Hole. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
All right, so for years we assumed that the underwater environment was quiet. We think of that as a quiet space. So what changed that assumption?
Well, it was changed the more we started to listen to the underwater world. So as humans, you know, we don't really hear well underwater, so we assumed the underwater world would be silent. But the more and more we went out and put hydrophones into the water and listened to the scene, we realized that there's actually a lot of different animals making sound. And so the seas are actually filled with sounds. They are not silent.
Yeah, it's quite a noisy place now, isn't it? Let's hear some sounds from underwater recordings that we've done. We'll start with a marine mammal found in Arctic waters, the bearded seal. Now, do we know if that vocalization is to find food or communicate with other seals? Do we know what they're saying?
we don't really know what they're saying, but we know this sound in particular is made by male bearded seals, and they use it to set up their territories underwater. So the, it's the males attracting the females with these sounds and also to defend their territories.
Now, also, it was really incredible is how far some of the sound travels underwater. One example is the song of the blue whale. Before man-made sound entered the ocean soundscape, how far could that sound travel?
So blue whale sounds are very low frequency sounds, and that's why they can travel very far underwater. Under the right conditions of temperature and the salinity of the water, they have been estimated to actually range ocean basins. So
wow, that's a long way. Yeah. And then today we have the human noise pollution. What's the best estimate of how far away a blue whale song can travel now?
Well, it's hard to say because it depends on where in the ocean you're looking, but it's definitely at a very reduced range over which blue whales can communicate today. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not in most areas not at the scale anymore as it used to be.
I think it was like 1,000+ miles, and now it's something like 50 to 100 miles. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
So light also doesn't penetrate very far into the marine environment. So species have evolved to use sound for almost all aspects of survival. Can you describe how marine mammals use sound?
So yeah, that's right. So it's really important to understand that light only penetrates the ocean in the upper layers. So marine mammals are basically living in a dark environment, and so they've really evolved to use sounds for every aspect of their life. Basically, they use it to communicate with each other in a mating context. They use it to find food, to navigate, to stay in touch. Mother calves are using sound for that. So it's basically all aspects of their lives, and a lot of the aspects that we are using visual communication for, they use sound to do the same things.
And of course, the soundscape of the marine world started to change drastically as commercial shipping traffic increased in the world's oceans. Can we quantify how these vessels have changed the soundscape of the oceans? We know that the numbers of them have certainly increased, but can we quantify that?
So that's actually what we are looking at, and which has this problem of rising shipping noise has really gotten more and more attention in recent years. And what people have found comparing ambient background noise from the 1950s to now is that over the last decades, shipping noise has basically doubled every decade. And if you think of, we are transporting 95% of all our goods through shipping. So we have a lot of ships and we're producing a lot of noise.
I guess it's kind of like the if you think about living on a rural street where you don't hear much traffic and then living next to a highway.
Exactly.
And so that's highways going across our ocean.
Exactly. Especially in coastal areas, we really created environments underwater that are more like cities than rural areas.
And just to get an idea of what it sounds like underwater, here's a large commercial vessel. So what we're hearing there is propellers, right?
It's propellers, yes. So the main noise that ships create is through the propellers. They, when they're turning, they're creating these bubbles, and when they burst, that's called cavitation, and that's the noise that is created by shipping.
And I would imagine the size of the boat has something to do with the sound too. You've got a little boat; it might not sound as big as one of those great big boats. Propellers are a lot bigger, right?
Definitely, yeah. The size has to do with the amount of noise that is put into the water, and also the frequency range. So smaller boats would produce sounds in higher frequency, which don't travel as far, whereas the bigger tankers are producing more noise in the lower frequencies that can travel further.
We've got a lot of those big tankers out there, don't we?
We do.
So that's and that's an interesting point, that the lower frequency travels farther than the higher frequency.
Yes.
Yeah. We are talking about ocean noise. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. So what are some of the other man-made sounds that have become more common in the marine environment?
So there's a lot of construction going on now offshore. So we have pile driving that is a problem. We have sonars. The Navy is using sonar. Scientific projects are using sonar or just in fishery. And one other larger scale problem are seismic air guns that are used for oil and gas exploration and have become very pervasive.
And are those air guns used all over, or are they in certain areas?
They're in certain areas, but the problem with these sounds is that they are very loud at the source, and they can travel, especially the lower frequencies of these air guns can travel hundreds of miles as well, similar to shipping noise.
All right, let's hear what an air gun sounds like. Okay, that could get annoying after a while.
It can. And actually, the interesting thing about it, just to talk about the scale again, so when you have a project that is taking place off of Nova Scotia, you can actually hear those same sounds that we just heard in the at the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So
really?
that's the scale over which these lower parts of the signals can travel and increase the noise that we are putting out
right.
there.
And now the decibel level is one way to quantify the sound and how loud it is. And the other aspect is sound is frequency. Human ears can only detect a certain frequency of sound. But as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking the marine mammals may not be hearing it the same way we're hearing it, correct?
Exactly, yeah. So marine mammals use sound differently. Some, like the baleen whales, the large whales, are using very low frequency sounds. So for them, the shipping noise and the noise that we are producing through air guns is the most will have the most impact because it's overlaps with their own frequencies. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the dolphins and porpoises, they are using much higher frequency sounds for finding their food. They are echolocating, and those sounds are high frequencies, mm-hmm. and they So they, those species will be less impacted by...
So when we're talking about the impacts, and certainly we're talking about, you know, getting in the way of their communications, but are we also damaging their ears in some way, or how they hear? Is there physical damage that's happening?
There can be. So the injuries would occur if marine mammals are really close to the source of a loud sound. You know, if they are very close to an seismic survey, for instance. And that's what we're trying to mitigate for that. So you can shut down procedures if animals are close to the source and so on. But yeah, there's definitely the potential for injury.
Let's talk to Joel, who's giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Many years ago, I heard of that there was evidence that the sound waves could bounce off the interface between two masses of seawater of different densities, et cetera, and that the whales, that would enhance a whale's ability to extend their range. It's like bouncing radio waves off the ionosphere, where straight-line radio transmission would actually curve, follow the curve of the Earth, so you could hear them farther, like lower end and stuff like that. And I was just curious whether that theory still holds currently or not, or whether you know.
It does, yeah. What you've heard about is the so-called SOFA channel, that sound fixing and ranging channel, that that can trap sound and thereby allow low frequency sounds to travel very, very far. And under certain circumstances, it allows those low frequency sounds that blue whales, for example, make to travel these really long ranges that can cross ocean basins. Mm.
Joel, thanks for the question. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. So we have some examples of higher and lower frequency sounds from marine mammals that live in our northeast waters. First one is the right whale. Let's take a listen to the right whale. I love that. That's just such the coolest animals anyway, but that's our lower frequency, right?
That's a lower frequency.
Okay, and then we've got a Mickey whale. Now, how are they? Are they making that noise with their mouths? How are they making that noise?
We actually don't really know they are making these sounds. No, and the minke whale, I'm particularly interested in them. It's the species that I'm studying, and it's just very recently we've really figured out that it's the minke whale making these sounds. Yeah. I mean, they sound very mechanical.
They sure do, like a boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's going to be very difficult then, trying to figure out. Because I know there's a lot of fish noise, too, that we still aren't really sure who's making what noises in a lot of them, right?
Yeah, we are constantly in the situation that we are listening to our recordings and we don't know which species we are listening to.
All right, so now we're going to listen to some high frequency, and here's a white-beaked dolphin.
So what you hear here is echolocation. Ah. They use this to navigate and to find food. Yeah, they get an echo back from the prey, and therefore can find it.
And then we have the humpback whale that has both high and low frequency. Tell us a little bit about the humpback. It has both high and low?
It's really interesting. It's produced by the males, mainly at the mating grounds, and they use it to attract females. That's what we think, anyway. And the interesting thing about humpback whale song is that it's changing every year, and all the males are singing the same song in any particular year.
That's a whole fascinating study in itself, isn't it?
The whole
whale song and what they're doing. We've had music albums from whale song. Just a fascinating creatures. So shipping noise is problematic then on two levels, decibel level and frequency. So explain that if you would.
So yeah, we have to look at the different frequencies, because we are particularly worried about the lower frequencies, because they are the ones that in which sounds can travel the furthest, and that's really what we're looking at.
So, as you know, offshore wind farms have been a controversial topic in our area. Do we have any data on the underwater noises that are emitted from wind farms?
There's little data on the noise that wind farms produce while they are operating. The biggest problem with wind farms is likely the construction phase, where pile driving is used to put the turbines into place. But there will also be some low-frequency sounds that are produced while the wind farms are operating. But it's different from what we are used to on land, where the blades are turning. That noise is not transmitted into the water. But there hasn't been many studies on the effects of the lower-frequency sounds that are produced by wind farms that are actually operating.
Yeah. There aren't any really here to study. We'd have to go over to Europe to figure that out, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it hasn't really been studied that much in Europe, because in Europe we have mainly higher frequency species. Mm-hmm. So we are worried there about the harbor porpoises. They are not so much bothered by low frequency sounds.
Right. So the whales that we see here, like the humpbacks and the right whales and things, mm-hmm. like, we're not seeing them over by where those wind farms are. So we don't really have that data then.
Yeah, we don't have that data yet, but it's likely to be much less than the impact from construction.
Right. So climate change is also making oceans louder. Explain that.
So with climate change, we are increasing the temperature of the waters, and there has been some ideas that by ocean acidification, that sounds can actually travel better in those circumstances.
Oh, wow.
And thereby by increasing temperature, that we are making the medium basically better in transmitting sounds.
Wow. And so that's another whole fascinating topic, is the mm-hmm. ocean acidification, because it's really hard to tell, you know, without a real baseline, mm-hmm. you know, what it was 50 years ago, let's say, compared to, you know, how fast that's happening. It's another big question. Lots of questions we have in the sea, don't we? Mm-hmm. Now, so describe some of the impacts that these man-made sounds have on marine mammals. We talked about that the closer they are, they could have some physical harm. This also is really critical for some of them in the communication. We're messing up their communication, correct?
Exactly, yeah. So that's one aspect that we started studying, is to look at how far the sounds that marine mammals make themselves could travel under different noise conditions, basically. And basically what we've learned is that the range over which their sounds can travel is dramatically reduced because we are putting all this noise in the water. And so they basically have less of a chance to communicate with each other because of it.
Mm. So exactly how noise pollution impacts marine mammals has really been difficult for scientists to quantify, because we can't control the amount of sound in the water. Mm-hmm. This is really fascinating. In the days following September 11th, 2001, terrorist attacks, commercial shipping traffic was reduced dramatically. And coincidentally, there was a scientific team out collecting samples from right whales. Mm-hmm. Tell us about their findings. This is really fascinating.
Yeah, so those scientists from the New England Aquarium, and together with Peter Corcoran here at NOAA, they analyzed feces samples of North Atlantic right whales that they collected that year and then in following years. And they can look at the hormone levels in these samples and look at stress levels. And they found that during that period where the shipping was completely reduced and therefore the noise levels were much, much lower, they actually found a reduction in stress levels.
So lower stress levels in the right whales during that time period.
Yes.
Yeah. And do we know? I mean, I guess we can assume stress must impact animals the same way it impacts humans. Mm-hmm. Stress can be a big factor in their health, correct?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We don't quite understand how, but what we need to keep in mind is that these noise levels are out there constantly now. So, you know, we might live next to a highway or stand next to a highway and be impacted, you know, for a little while, and then we go and find a quieter place. In many areas in the oceans, those quieter places just don't exist anymore. And so these animals are living with these noise levels constantly.
Something you don't really think much about, but when you think about that, it's almost like, you know, sometimes you see people, you know, like law enforcement, if they, you know, want to get into they play loud music to drive you crazy to get the people to come out. I mean, that whole being subjected to those loud noises on a continual basis really can drive you crazy. I would imagine it would do the same thing to the animals. So these poor animals are trying to find quiet spaces, and there just aren't that many of them around. So what do we do about that?
So first of all, we need to quantify, where the hotspots are, where we're producing most noise. And then when we plan new developments, like new oil and gas projects or alternative energy projects, we need to take into account what's already out there. Mm-hmm. There's ways you can quiet ships down, actually. The noise with ships is a byproduct. It's not something that, it's something that the shipping industry is actually relatively open to try and fix as a problem, because there is some technology that can actually quiet down propellers, and in some cases it also heightens fuel efficiency. So it can be a win-win situation.
So there's some incentive
there's a lot to do.
So NOAA's initiated oceanic sound mapping projects to identify, as you're saying this, where the man-made noise is coming from and its impacts on how marine mammals communicate. Now, you're working on one of those projects at the Stillwagon Bank National Marine Sanctuary. Tell us about the project and why you chose Stillwagon Bank.
So we chose Stillwagon Bank because it's right here at our doorstep, for one. And the sanctuary has been a very productive area, because the main feature of the sanctuary is Stillwagon Bank, which produces a lot of upwelling, and therefore we have a lot of different marine mammals, up to 19 species, that are visiting this area over the year. It's also because it's lying right outside the port of Boston. We call it an urban sanctuary, so we have a lot of shipping traffic that is going right through the sanctuary. So it was sort of the ideal place to look at the impact of that noise can have on marine mammals.
Right. And so this is a project that's going to be going on for a while. I mean, you're really at the beginning here, correct?
We finished the data collection process. So we went out there and we put underwater microphones into the water, and we listened for 3 years. Wow. And so we have all this data now, and we are trying to figure out how much contribution ships make to the soundscape in Stillwagon.
Yeah. Stillwagon Bank really hasn't been a sanctuary all that long. Was it 1992?
It was established in 1992.
So yes. Do we know much about before it became a sanctuary, about noise levels? Was there research done there before this?
No.
Not really, no. Yeah. We started this project 3 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. So there are some regulations on sound in the marine environment. The Marine Mammal Protection Act sets up parameters. Mm-hmm. But your research at Stillwagon Bank shows that animals are being exposed to those levels that require action under the act, but we don't have a means to monitor sound or enforce the regulations. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So we are actually producing a lot of noise chronically, and right now we don't really have any means to regulate and manage that.
So that's a problem. Mm-hmm. We have these regulations in place, yet we can't really enforce them.
And we need to learn much more about the amount of noise that's out there. We know for some areas how noisy we are, but for many areas we just don't have the data yet.
And I would imagine that's a tough thing too, because as you're saying, some of these lower frequency sounds can travel so far, but measuring that, you sort of have to be in one area and then measure it in 1,000 miles away or whatever it might be.
Exactly, we really have to think about the problem on a large scale. It's really a global problem. It's not any one country's problem. It's an ocean problem. It's noise pollution on a very large scale, and we need to find ways to manage this.
So do we have other countries then as well doing the same type of research in other areas, other hotspots, so to speak?
Yeah, it's definitely becoming an issue of concern. For instance, in Europe also, it's under the new EU marine strategy framework, noise pollution is part of that.
So with better sound mapping and sound monitoring, we'd have data on where and when we have a problem or what these problem areas are, underwater noise pollution. A better case, perhaps, for regulating it?
Exactly, yeah. So we need to find where the hotspots are, and then when new developments are proposed, we need to take into account that the background levels are not normal anymore. Mm-hmm. They are already elevated, and then we have to see what other noise we are allowing to go into the water in that in that spot.
Again, it gets going back to identifying where all those sounds are coming from, which seems like such a big task.
Exactly.
Because sometimes, you know, I know when we have some of the fish sounds, or you know, you figuring out, like we were talking to the minke whale, how they're making that sound, where those sounds are coming from, can take a bit of detective work, which takes a lot of time.
Exactly. Yeah. And the other there's actually another effort is to map marine mammal occurrence at the same time, so that we can not only find where the noise is loudest, but also where the hotspots for these animals are. You know, which areas do they really need?
Like the right whales in Cape Cod Bay.
Exactly.
Kind of thing,
yeah.
Now, NOAA's also undertaking a larger sound mapping project in addition to your project on Stellwagen Bank. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that's an effort that just started within the agency to look at the problem at a larger scale, as the way we should look at the problem. So they are trying to map ocean noise in the US EEZ and come up with maps that show which areas are the hotspots. For instance, the Gulf of Mexico is very noisy. A lot of oil and gas exploration there. And then, of course, our area here, the East Coast, would be another one. So it's an effort to really map what we're putting out.
And of course, and then just going back to having that data from those researchers who were out there after 9/11, that's got to be critical, I would think, in doing some comparison stuff of the impact of the noise.
Exactly. Yeah. Another area that is not that impacted yet is the Arctic. But of course, with the Arctic opening up and more shipping traffic starting to appear, that's an area where we actually have to look out to try and not let the noise levels get extremely high.
Denise Risch with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Northeast Fisheries Science Center here in Woods Hole. Fascinating research. Thanks for being with us, Denise. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.
There's a lot of different varieties of fish sounds.
From UMass Dartmouth, Dr. Rodney Roundtree.
For example, the longhorn sculpin, basically the bones of its shoulder girdle that hold its pectoral fins, have some modifications that allow it to rub together very rapidly to produce this vibrating sound. Other fish grind their teeth. Many fish have what are called pharyngeal teeth, which are teeth that line the throat. And when a fish swallows food, it uses that to grind up the food before it enters the stomach. But they also grind those teeth to make sounds.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.